man causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell, where the fire never goes out. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than to have 2 feet and be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have 2 eyes and be thrown into hell, where the worms that eat them do not die, and the fire is not quenched.
And welcome to Question Christianity, where we put the question mark in Christianity. I'm your host, Jay. To my right is Zelly, and we have across from me is B. So on today's show, we're going to be talking about damnation. Yes, I said it, damnation. What? Okay, so damnation, in case for those of you who don't know, that is essentially a curse to go to hell, right? That's doom and gloom. So in our previous podcast, we talked about salvation, and we also spoke about that Jesus was the only way, and if you do not follow that way, then you are cursed to eternal damnation, but without God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now some of my cast members did tiptoe around that, so let's be honest, right? So now we're in the position where we're going to talk about, do you know what happens when you go to heaven? What happens if you do not believe and you don't go to heaven? So, Zelly, what do you think about that?
Wow. I should have brought my Bible. That a little. Yeah, so this is, you know, right off the top, I always think of, this is a kind of a, I've thought about this before, in C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle, The Chronicles of Narnia. Mm-hmm. And the last battle, he writes about, you know, there's this guy in the enemy, you know, one of the enemies, and he was very faithful within his religion. And in this book, like, Aslan kind of has, like, you know, has comments on it. I don't know exactly how it goes, but basically implies, like, he served, you know, it kind of brought up the question, like, if you serve well in different religions, is there a possibility they're serving the same God, as even though religions do different things differently? That's what I thought he kind of brought up to it, mm-hmm. which was really interesting, because as Christians, you know, that's what we believe is damnation is, you know, you're saved when you believe that Jesus Christ saved you for your sins, that Jesus Christ is God's son, and his death is what paid for our ransom for our sins. Mm-hmm. But then this sort of brought up the question of someone never having got to know Aslan at all and living in an isolated religion where he served within that religion, you know, faithfully and fearfully of the Lord. So I guess that's my only, in terms of this topic, I thought that was strange in that book. C.S. Lewis is such a profound Christian and wrote about so many very, you know, different things. But yeah, like, you know, who, you know, like right now it says Jesus is going to come back when, you know, the languages reach every corner of the earth. So it's like, what about the places where somebody has never had the opportunity to, to meet Christ or, you know, learn about Jesus?
And then so those would be called, I mean, we talked about this in Salvation too. Those would be the unreached people groups, right?
Right.
Was that UPG or URPG? So, okay. So let's flip this a little. I'm an unbeliever, right? I didn't ask Jesus to die on the cross for me, you know, nor do I feel like that was required. Why is your way the only way and everybody else can't, you know, there's no other path to heaven, right? So according to the Bible, Jesus is the way and the life. No one comes upon the Father except through me, right? So he made that pretty clear. So for those who don't believe or follow other faiths, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, reincarnationism, you know, whatever it is, that whatever ism that they study, Christians are essentially saying that everybody else doesn't get to go to heaven. Where, and let's be honest, let's talk about the real thing. Damnation means you go to hell. You burn forever. What kind of God would send good people who may not necessarily know exactly who he is to hell, right? That's a tough question. So we're going to let B answer that and go. Next.
I don't think that, you know, that does not sound like a loving approach to me. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to get in trouble for that. But that does not sound like love. That sounds like, you know, you didn't ask to be here. You didn't ask to be born where you were born. You're here now, and it's either my way or burn forever. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Like, you are, like, go in the house and picture yourself getting inside your stove and it doesn't go off, right? That is...
I burned myself for 1 second and I was crying like a baby.
Man, so... absolutely. And so that seems... You know, we have laws here to talk that speaks to cruel and unusual punishment, right in America. And that seems cruel. So cruel that I challenge it.
Wow. Mm. Wow. He actually said that. Print that, baby. Print that.
Meaning, you know.
Now, do you challenge it because it is so harsh or because it's so unbelievable?
I have a hard time reconciling, and I hope I don't regret this, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm done. but I have a hard time reconciling that with love. I do not think if I had multiple children, mm-hmm. let's say 10, right?
Boy, and let's say you're a machine, man. I'll talk to your wife about that.
Yeah, poor girl. Right. But no, if I had a number of children, uh-huh. and one was, oh no, this is a better example. How about this? If I was someone that was born in Iraq and I ran an orphanage and I helped the poor and I healed the sick and I, you know, I was a physician. I did all of these things that the Bible speaks of favorably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ask us to do. Love mm-hmm. my neighbor, right? Never raise a fist towards anyone. But I never accepted Christ. And for that, in terms of how we describe it, and that feels like, and so I burn in hell forever.
Yep. Now, in that same token, about to flip this on you again.
Sure.
I've been evil my entire life. The last 5 minutes, I give my life to the Lord, mm-hmm. and I get to go to heaven, but not the orphanage person. So let's make it really bad, right? Whew. Let's say you were sexual abusing, mm-hmm. sexual assaulting, child molester,
mm-hmm.
your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But before someone's about to put a bullet in your head, because you know the guy told you, I'm gonna shoot you.
Right.
You have 5 minutes to pray. You commit yourself to God. According to Christianity, that person goes to heaven. But the person who doesn't believe in Jesus, who took care of the sick, took in the homeless, fed the poor, did all the tenets of Christianity, because they did not accept, they don't go. Okay, I'm done. Now I'm waiting for you to answer. Because you can see how people have an issue with Christian faith when you put those two different worlds. You're talking about a person who's been, who deserves to burn in hell for all time, gets to go to heaven because he finally committed himself to the Lord. But the other person doesn't.
I try to match that in my mind. When you read the Bible and you read Jesus walk and talk and things that he did, and it doesn't match. You know,
right.
It doesn't, you know, he healed, he forgave the most wretched, the most, you know, tax collectors and prostitutes, mm-hmm. and groups of people that the other Israelis or Jews at the time did not like. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he was all in that.
Right.
Right. And forgave and walked. And even the he's on the cross and stabbed by a Roman. And he said, forgive them all. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They never, most of them never accepted him.
Okay.
And he, at the end, said, forgive them all. Okay. They don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
But I'm asking you to forgive them and you know, take me at this point.
Okay.
And so that image of burning in hell forever placed against that image of someone dying unfairly,
okay,
and yet offering forgiveness and love as he dies, it doesn't match to me. One and one at some point must equal two.
Okay. Okay.
So I will stop there.
Okay. So you've essentially proven my point, because the guys who were at the cross with Jesus were criminals.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? One is like, well, if you're God, call yourself down, you know, get yourself down from him. The other one's like, hey, we deserve to be here.
Right.
You know, he asked Jesus to remember him. And he said, you know, on this day, you'll be in paradise with me. So
he did him one better.
Huh?
Yeah. He did him one better.
Right, right. Yeah. So... But those guys were bad guys.
Yes, they were.
There are people who were looking at them. They weren't bad guys. And so one is going to heaven, and the other one who wasn't a criminal, there's a probability that they don't, right? And so we still haven't really connected the dots where someone who's evil their whole life, in the last few moments of their life, they get to... They get their get-out-of-jail-free card, mm-hmm. essentially, which is what people are looking at it as, mm-hmm. you know, where the person who has worked their entire life to serve the community, humanity, or whatever, the Mother Teresa's of their region, and they don't get to go to heaven. Is that correct? Is that your understanding mm-hmm. of the word? Zelly, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean...
Your voice sounds so much better than mine on this mic. Maybe I need to change mine.
I'm trying really hard today. I'm like, I gotta be better than
right.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's in terms of like, you know, because they say like if someone didn't get the opportunity to hear about Christ. Mm-hmm. And so that comes in so many different ways too, because that opens the can of worms where it's like, okay, so someone else's damnation resting on the fact that none of us got to them, you know what I mean? Because that would be, you know, Christians are accomplices to mm-hmm. that, you know, if right. we're not spreading the word out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I had a little thought there, but it's slipping. So like in the last 5 minutes, let's say like someone lives their life. I mean, that's just the story, you know, of forgiveness, the redemption story of Christ. But I think it's because it's like, we have such a hard time understanding, like truthfully, you know, like that heart change, you know, that he made. It was because Jesus recognized it's real.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we don't like looking at this story because people look towards their death and be like, well, I'll just switch and I'll believe it. And it's like, I think that's just not, that's why the one robber, you know, couldn't do it with his life on the line. You think he'd be able to switch his heart, but right. a whole life of bad, you know, wouldn't make that switch so easy. So I think it's, you know, I don't think the heart can be changed so quickly, and God is gonna, or maybe it can, but God's focused intently on truly what our heart is. You know, we can't tell what each other's true heart is. We could hear each other's minds or, you know, read each other's emotions and try to guess what's really in there. But, yeah, so, you know, in terms of someone living a whole life terribly and still coming to redemption, you know, it's God would know if that was truly a heartfelt change. But, you know, and two, this is, I think if you bring it out, like, this is still from a human perspective, we're looking at, like, the things we did here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously this is from God's perspective over a whole large, you know, one of our lifetimes is very little in terms of us doing bad sins, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
Don't mention him. Don't mention me. So yeah, but you can see how difficult this subject is for people to grasp with.
Yeah.
Right. And so we want everyone else to understand that, you know, it doesn't always make sense to us either. But having said that, just because it doesn't make sense to us doesn't mean that it's not real.
Right.
Right. And so there are people that just believe this whole thing is hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo, fairy tales. You know, it's a book of very good philosophies, but don't take it too terribly seriously. You know, I don't believe that a loving God would send good people to hell just because either they don't know him or they don't necessarily believe him. Right? Right? Are we understanding? So having said that, Christianity is very strict about this. You know, they said Jesus is the only way. There is no other way to get to heaven. Right? Now, correct me if I'm wrong. If there's another passage in the Bible that says, oh, here's an alternative way, because trust me, if we had discovered it, chances are we, you know, we would have exploited the other, you know, whichever path is easiest. But if you're going to go to hell, like, how does that work? So
are there, do we think there's different levels to hell? Do you think there's different punishments?
I think there is, yeah.
Like purgatory?
Well, I mean, like, if you look and maybe towards, like, something, you know, non-Christian or, like Dante's Inferno, they describe, right, or, like, different older, levels different hell. Levels of mm-hmm. hell for different, you know, I've heard it described in terms of relegated to different sins, or do you think different in total? So, like, let's say, you know, someone who was Mother Teresa all their life, did everything right, but never accepted Christ in their heart. I mean, certainly we would think their punishment shouldn't be the same as, like, you know.
Well, in the Bible, it does say people who are in hell are screaming and gnashing their teeth. So
everybody.
Yeah, everyone's going to be. It's a, from what I understand, it's a place of suffering, mm-hmm. right? It's not a place where you're going to have booze and women and stuff. That's not necessarily the case. So, and then the other side of it is you go to heaven. So, you know, and I know you mentioned purgatory, which I'm glad you did. That's very interesting. So now the Catholic faith is purgatory, which has been a mainstay in that faith. I'm not sure if that's still the case today, but that had been a mainstay for many centuries, right? Where you weren't bad enough to go to hell, but not good enough to go to heaven. So you go to this middle place, and then people pray you out of it. So, and I don't mean to laugh at someone else's belief, but I just want you to understand. Yeah, I was laughing. I apologize. That's what they were taught. Now, I'm not sure if the church, the Catholic Church, has gone back on that or not. I did hear rumors about that, but I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But we know that was a tenet of their faith. You know, so. Why didn't the other denominations of Christianity pick up on that, number one? And number two, how does that pray me out of purgatory? How does that even work? Because where's the benchmark for your sins are too great, so you go straight to hell, but yeah, you're right here in the middle kind of thing, so we're going to put you here, and people who know you and love you are going to pray you out of there, right?
You are 99 in terms of your bad things. You hit that 100,
right,
burn
right.
in hell.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. And it's a benchmark that no one can see, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know I'm getting off on a tangent here, but we're talking about damnation, and I want to know about purgatory.
Well, before, can I just add one more thing? I think that one of the things that I've always had this visual in my mind of is there's like this train in the center of town. We'll call it the God train.
Okay.
Right? And there's this God train, and it is a great ride and experience. And once you get on, man, that thing is special, right? Okay. And at some point, that train's going to take off, mm-hmm. right? And it's going to go somewhere where there's just going to be, you know, the greatest time, right? Whoever's on the train, you get to go there. Whoever's not on the train, whoever doesn't get that ticket, is going to be in a place where I wouldn't call, I don't know. It's not hell, but it's not that, uh-huh. right? It's not this
not the God train.
Wondrous experience, right? And so I guess in my mind, and again, I'm just living, right? I'm just trying to think through things.
Right.
That seems to be how I always thought. Hell is separation from that.
From the train or the town that you're in?
Both. Well, okay. Separation from the train that takes you to that experience, okay. right? You don't get to... You know, I mean, and you know, the gloriousness of God, the universality of God, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You out. There's a party going on, and you can't get in.
Right.
Right. And so, it's a way of thinking about it. It's punitive, but it's not horrifying.
Okay. Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't never get to get in, right? And so I don't know. It's I don't know. It's just that, and again, don't claim to be right. I'm just expressing my thoughts. And that just seems, the way we talk about hell and burning forever, if I'm nine and I die, right?
Right.
I'm a 9-year-old. I don't know nothing.
Right.
Right. I'm burning in hell. How's that okay?
It's not. It's not. But. We're going to get back to that. The one thing I love about this podcast is your colorful analogies. I love them, B.
Yeah.
I love them. We're going to take our first break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, we're back, and welcome to the next segment of Question Christianity. We left off with B. I got to put those name tags. So we left off with B. Talking about the 9-year-old. Will the 9-year-old go to hell, right? Do babies go to hell? And do people who are mentally challenged, do they go to hell because they can't articulate that they love Jesus or they know who he is or understand who he is? So those are important things for us to know. I'm sorry. I was looking at the recording. I'm making sure this isn't recording over the last segment, but it's not. Okay, cool. Sorry about that. Editor, cut that out. So, 9-year-old going to hell. Babies going to hell. Do we believe that?
No.
So, but the rules still apply to the same people, right? So why wouldn't they go to hell, babies? And that's where, like, you know, why wouldn't they go to hell? But, I don't know, 18-year-old, 17-year-old probably would if they didn't believe they died without Christ.
Where's the cutoff?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So can anyone explain that?
I don't think that I kind of ended the last segment in, you know, to your point, dropping that. But I don't think that that would be ideal for someone who just has not had the chance or the maturity level or the exposure or the understanding of that relationship and the request when it comes to salvation. I don't think that that would be an ideal situation for someone that fall into any of those categories. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you know, a part of me that is challenged by if I'm 89, and I've lived a life of just pure, and we talked about this in the last segment, but just pure evil, right? I'm the head of some country, and I've killed thousands upon thousands of people, ruined lives, and started wars, and all of this stuff. And then, you know, there needs to be a carve out for that too. Mm-hmm. You know, I get out of jail free, so to speak, because you know, I'm laying on my deathbed. I know the end is coming. I feel my body deteriorating. And, mm-hmm. You know, I accept.
Right, right.
You know, that seems wrong too. And again, I like, you know, we talked about, you know, salvation and before, and what does that mean, right? And so I'm just challenged by maybe how we're thinking about it.
What do you mean, how we're thinking about it?
So, you know, as I mentioned before, I think that you're offered an opportunity for those who have, who've been exposed to it. Now I'm going to go back to my train analogy. Mm-hmm. You're off, just to clarify that, you're offered an opportunity to accept the gift, mm-hmm. right? And essentially board the train, mm-hmm. right? And that takes you to heaven, right? And so if you do, you know, if you don't take that chance as a believer, then you're separated from God. Mm-hmm. You're separated from his grace and love, and all that's gone, right? And so to me, that would be worse than burning in to an extent. And what I mean by that is, you know, and I'm talking about folks that have had the opportunity to be exposed to it and accept the gift, right? Because it is a gift. And you made a great point. You don't earn this. Mm-hmm. It's something you just have to accept or not accept. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, if you choose not to take that opportunity, I think that's, and being separated from God, that's hell. Mm-hmm. That could be hell, right? Or a type of hell. Now, again, I don't want to get into the purgatories and the levels of hell and all of that stuff, because but I do think that you know, I think we need to do I want to say that? Do we rethink how we're thinking about it?
So let me recap this, because you made a very, very interesting point. So, and like I said, I love your analogies. This train one is gonna be, this is gonna be solid. So you have the golden train that goes to heaven, right? And you got the golden ticket, right?
Right.
And there are people that can see the train.
Right.
They can see people with the golden ticket getting on the train, and they choose not to. Mm-hmm. So if what you said is correct, God doesn't send anyone anywhere. You choose, right? According to your analogy, let me finish. According to your analogy, I see the train. I refuse to believe that's real. It's all fairy tales, hocus pocus, da 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 da. I choose not to get on that train. Mm-hmm. If I choose not to get on that train, then I'm simply choosing an alternate path to do something else. And that alternate, and then all. So according to the Bible, there's only one way to heaven through Christ, which would be the golden train. You get the ticket as your salvation. You get on, they punch your ticket, and you go to heaven. Mm-hmm. Anyone else who's left behind doesn't get to go, right? Mm-hmm. So they choose that. He doesn't send you. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just using your analogy and then what the word says, that people actually choose those paths. So, Zelly, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of why we are created, is we are given the choice to choose, you know, choose everything about our lives, and the biggest life of, or the biggest choice is if we believe in God, and what we believe is if you believe in, this thing's going on. But believe in Jesus Christ as your Savior. So even bringing it back to like the thief on the cross, you know, I think the reason why we get that answer from Jesus is because, again, this is something we talk about, and we look for things to say, you know, this, you know, where is the cutoff line of what happens? But it's God can just truly measure your heart, what's really going on. So this guy's response was very clear that, you know, it was clear that he believed Jesus Christ had the power to save him, and that's all Jesus, you know, needed to know. So with that being in, like, I bring it back towards that, like, C.S. Lewis thing, you know? So it's like, what about the people that were unreached? And I don't know if they need to hear the exact gospel that we are talking about, but everybody is presented at some point with the question of whether God is real or not. And and they can make that choice. So when I think of like the C.S. Lewis interpretation that I used in the beginning.
Which was a very good interpretation, by the way.
I need to like pull it up. It's really fascinating because it blew my mind when I read it. I was like, wait, what is he saying here? Like, but imagine so, because Aslan talks to this guy and gives him good favor, even though he's grew up and served his own religion faithfully. But imagine you're like the CEO of a company and, you know, conglomerates and conglomerates of all these companies, and you end up at some company far down the line, doesn't even know it's a product of this main company, and you see like a janitor working and just busting it out, you know. Mm-hmm. You as a fair CEO would see that they are fully like doing their job to the most. And even though, you know, that person might be looking and serving within their realm or wherever they work, they're truly serving the CEO, whether they recognize it or not. So like, can God look at us or look at people who are unreached and came from a different structure and see that their overall acceptance of God, how they had been taught, of correct good things, you know, doing right and wrong. Is there a chance that that is looked upon favorably within God? Is that what C.S. Lewis was saying? You know, so like, let's say, I mean, again, we say that, you know, Jesus Christ is the way into heaven. So that's where it'd be, you'd have to accept Jesus Christ, is from what we're talking about now. But
I think, though, that it gets to, it really gets, if you really want to put a fine point on it, it gets to what, you know, what did, I hope I don't say anything wrong here because I'm trying to think of the verse as I'm speaking. I should have pulled it up on my phone. But when Jesus says, and he says this sort of thing several times in different ways. I'm the vine, I am the way, truth, the light, the life.
Yeah.
Right? And if, you know, I think it depends on what does, if you follow me, right? Mm-hmm. What does that really mean? Because, and then he goes and pays the ticket for us.
Mm-hmm.
He pays the bill,
right?
Through his death and resurrection, right? I've broken everyone away from death itself. Then what does that mean to? And maybe this is just the an area where I need to grow and develop. But like, what does that mean then? If he's paid the ticket and he says he's the way, then what is that path, if that makes sense?
A straight and narrow one from what I'm told. You know, okay. So it's but once, so okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, salvation means once you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, which means you believe in your heart and you've confessed with your mouth and you believe in your heart that Jesus Christ is Lord, you will be saved. Right or wrong? Yes or no?
That's what we are told.
Okay.
Right?
So if that's the case, that's pretty so you believe it in your heart, you confess it with your mouth, and then apparently your name is written in a book, right? Forever and ever, right? So now that's where the ticket is paid, and then you accept that ticket and you get on that train, right?
The ticket was paid at the death and resurrection.
Right, but you have to accept the ticket to get on the train, right?
The bills,
so you have to choose to take that ticket,
yep,
and then get on that train.
Yep.
Okay. So if I sit on the station and I'm like, nope, I'm going to wait for a train that says my name on it, am I choosing now damnation over heaven?
Yes, technically, yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. We're getting somewhere now.
So,
okay.
So
write all emails to B.
Well, no, but yeah, but if he says I'm the way, this is the way, follow me, and you'll be with me forever, right? If you don't follow me, then you're going to not be with me. I guess I'm still trying to reconcile, does that mean burning? I know the Bible says it, but I'm still trying to reconcile that, right? Okay. With, you know,
and that's a lot of people, because Christianity is a, I wouldn't say a major faith, but it's close. But even if it were 51%, 49% of people believe other things.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that 49% of what you got, how many people on this planet? 7 billion?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people.
That's 7 billion today.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right? Exactly.
That's 7 billion as of today. 100 years ago, right? Or 300 years ago, yeah. Or 600 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people.
And that's another thing, you know, because once Christ had done his ministry, there were things happening all over the world because God had spread humanity all over the planet. What about those people? Do they go to hell? Because there have been many generations that have lived and died and never heard a word about
mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are the things that, you know, that I have questions with. Now, can we answer them? Now, you know, I guess you have to ask them when you get there, but here's the kicker. There's one thing I'm trying to understand. If I do not believe, is he sending me or am I choosing? Right? Because I'm using your golden ticket analogy, which, by the way, is so awesome. We should change the title of this to the golden train or something. So, but I see the golden train. We all see the golden train. Two out of three of us don't believe that that's the right route. Right, so the third person says, I believe in this train, I'm going to accept this train, and I'm going to get my ticket. So they give you the ticket, and you get on the train. The train leaves, and we're going to wait for the next train that never shows, according to Christianity, because that was the only train that takes you to heaven,
mm-hmm.
right? So the other two-thirds of this group is cursed to damnation. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, you're making me think differently. Like, is God, allowing you into heaven's gates and that's it? And if not, then you're rejected away, you know, or like sending to hell, you know, is that what you're saying? Like, basically,
right,
you know,
because
that's what we're taught.
Does God own hell?
Yes.
Yes.
He's right. According to the Bible, nothing was created without him. And anything that was created cannot be. Well, how does it work? Nothing was created wasn't. Anything that's uncreated wasn't. I don't know. But he created everything. All right. So I'm trying to remember that passage because that was always very interesting. But so, yes. But from what I understand, that place was never meant for humanity. That was meant for Satan and his boys. Right. So. How we got stuck with that also is beyond me, but I think that's because of the sin of Adam and Eve, right? That was what caused that whole problem. So if that is indeed the case, then I'm just asking, do you choose hell or are you sent to hell? Now, based on your analogy, I'm interpreting that you choose to. Because God, according to what you said, Christ has made the sacrifice. He's paid the price. He paid the price for the ticket. All you have to do is accept the ticket, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the analogy for salvation, right? So that same analogy would be if I choose not to take the ticket, then I'm choosing an alternate path, my own path,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I can't hear you.
Apologies. Yes. Yeah, so... That is the choice, right? That does appear to be the scenario, mm-hmm. I'll say. I think that, now, so what does that mean, right? So there's the train and it goes to another place and you know, God says, hey, welcome everybody. And the door's shut. And you're out here. You're outside of the gate, right? The party's going on.
Right.
And you can't get in anymore. So then what happens to, I guess that's what I'm saying. So, does God then say, guess what, guys? Door shut. Turn the oven on, boys.
Woo. You know? Yeah, I don't like that. So now that you can't get in, we're going to turn the oven on you and cook you. Yeah, but I mean, all right. I mean, isn't that what you're saying, though?
That's what we've been told. And I guess for me, do I believe that?
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
So we talk about... Christianity doesn't require you to do anything, right? Oh, but well, okay, well, let me take that back. No, it does require you to do stuff, but the salvation piece of it, you don't have to do anything special. There's no ritual attached to it, right? You don't have to run to the front of the church and confess or anything like that. Can you do that in a closet and be like, I believe in you, Jesus. I believe you're real. How do you become a believer, first of all? And then how do you prevent someone from, let's say, for instance, I don't believe. You believe that I'm going to hell if I don't believe. How do you approach that? So I come to you, I'm like, you're a Christian, you're a believer, you believe you're gonna go to heaven, but I believe in the Ghouli Ghoul God or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. what I'm saying, and reincarnation or what have you. Mm-hmm. I believe that path. Mm-hmm. So according to you, you believe I'm just gonna go straight to hell. There's no reincarnation for me. There's no light at the end of the tunnel for me. I'm going to burn, right?
That's what we are taught.
Do you believe that?
I just said a moment ago, I don't know if I do. Yeah, okay, I don't know if...
Right, that's fair. That's fair.
I don't know that... I'm sorry. I'm going to give you... Yeah. I'll stop in a moment. But I don't know that does not feel loving. You made a different choice. And if the choice isn't me, you burn.
Okay. But don't we do that here in our own society? Yeah, our own children? I mean, maybe not to the point where they're going to burn to death.
I'm going to burn you, Billy.
But I mean,
you messed up real bad.
But oftentimes, I mean, I can give you a prime example of my son, right? And he would often, when he was really little, he was exploring and stuff like that. And I would tell my son, don't touch the stove, it'll burn you. Mm-hmm. And he would look and he'd walk away and he'd always test me. And he'd be like, I'm like, don't touch that stove, mm-hmm. you know, it's gonna burn you. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna say anything this time. So he touches the stove. Whoop, and he's like, oh, he starts screaming around. See, I told you, right? Does God not do the same thing for us? Knocking on our door, be like, hey, I'm here. I'm ready to enter your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't force himself on, from what I understand, he doesn't force himself on anybody. He gives you a choice, right? Does he not? He wants you to be with him, mm-hmm. but he does not force anything on you. You choose one way or the other, mm-hmm. right? So according to the tenets of Christianity, there are only two paths. One leads, which is nice and wide for you, leads straight to the abyss, while the other one, which is nice and narrow, leads to heaven. So, having said that, do you believe that I would go to hell because I don't believe what you believe?
Personally, no.
Okay.
Right? And I know that's not what we are taught.
Right.
Right, but I'm saying as a person who I believe in, I guess I believe more in God's grace than God's wrath.
Okay. Let's go with that. So you're saying that he's going to, even after the door shut, he's going to give you multiple chances, even after the door shut. Because
I guess I'm still stuck on, does he turn the oven on? Right? So you used the analogy of your son.
I think the oven's already on. It's just, do you want to jump into? So, but he's telling you it's hot down there.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But you use the analogy that, you know, I'm going to let my son touch that stove.
Right.
Bop. Oh, Dad, you know what? I learned my lesson, right? And the kids, I said it to my parents. We all said it to our friends. Oh, you know, you told me not to do that. I remember you saying that years ago, and I did it, and this is what happened.
Right.
But no one's parents say, okay, hold your hand on that stove forever.
Right.
You really going to learn because you didn't get it when I told you.
But in that same token, anybody's son, mm-hmm. I can give you a prime example. There's a kid in a little village, 13 years old, 13, 14 years old, got shot by a cop, right? Mm-hmm. But what it was, you know, he was shooting, the cops were chasing him down, he had the gun in his hand, and then, you know, he stood by an open fence, he tossed the gun away. When the cop told him to turn around, he turned around really fast, and mm-hmm. the guy shot him, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I said all that to say this. His mom had been telling him, you're going to die out in them streets if you keep acting this way. Mm-hmm. At some point, that choice was always his. He chose the streets instead of going to the school. Mm-hmm. He chose to shoot at someone, run away from the cops. And then, you know, of course, all those actions are a culmination of mm-hmm. what happens to him at the end, which mm-hmm. is ultimately his destruction. Mm-hmm. So having said that, there has to be a point where we're like, look, I gave you chance after chance and you still chose the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you want me to do about it? You
know, no, I get that piece. Uh-huh. I do. I'm thinking I'm making myself very clear. I guess when it comes to burning forever.
Yes.
You know, that doesn't feel like love to me. Even if I've given you choices, options, opportunities to accept me and you don't, guess what? I'm going to grab the folks that did. Uh-huh. We're going to go over here and we're going to do our thing. But you get to burn forever. I guess that's where I'm stuck at. And it's hard to reconcile that. And maybe that is just something I need to grow in. Mm-hmm. Or it's something I need to challenge, right? It's one or the other. Maybe it could be others as well. But I think that is, you know, is that love?
Well, we'll find out after this break. We'll be back in a little bit. Okay, and we're back for our final segment in Question Christianity. Zelly has something very interesting to talk about.
Don't pump it up or nothing.
Chronicles of Narnia. But he said something about, we were talking offline about C.S. Lewis and how he was explaining about Aslan and people following tenets of the faith in a different faith. So can you just quickly recap what it is that you're talking about in case people have never seen anything about Chronicles of Narnia and know anything about that?
So like the last battle is the seventh book in the series. So all of Chronicles of Narnia is based around the gospel in different ways. C.S. Lewis modeled it after, actually he modeled it after several different things. But in the last battle, it kind of all revolves around, you know, the end times, what we'd call Revelation. So in the story of the last battle, there is another country called the Calormenes. And they are coming into Narnia, and they serve the god Tash. So they come into Narnia, and they're trying to take over the country, and they want to say that Aslan, who in this situation represents our god, Jesus, so they want to dethrone him. And there's this one character named Emeth. And so Emeth gets sort of fed up throughout the whole process because at some point someone is saying that Tash and Aslan are the same and that they have this deity inside this tent. So enraged that Aslan, who he sees as the bad god because he comes from, you know, the other place, he goes into the tent to see Tash, who he believes is his god. He goes in there and there's a soldier there waiting who is just supposed to kill anyone and stop them from coming in the tent. So this Emeth dude, the last thing you see of him is he kills this soldier in rage that they've been lying about whatever is in this tent, and he ends up dying. And he ends up in Aslan's country. And so Aslan then, you know, he realizes that Aslan was the true god. And he says he's going to be condemned to, or he's thinking, Emeth, he's going to be condemned to hell because he's followed Tash all his life doing good deeds in the name of this other god. So let me pull up. So then this is what C.S. Lewis has commented on it. And basically Aslan says to him that you've done good deeds in the name of Tash. He is an evil god. You cannot do good deeds in the name of an evil god. You are doing those good deeds for me. And that was what he put, again, in a fictional book.
Right.
But he has commented on this. So this is, let me pull up the, so here's two things he said. C.S. Lewis said that, I think every prayer which is sincerely made, even to a false god or to a very imperfectly conceived true god, is accepted by the true god, and that Christ saves many who do not think they know him, for he is present in the good side of the inferior teachers they follow. In the parable of the sheep and goats, those who are saved not seem to know that there that they have served Christ. But of course, our anxiety about unbelievers is most usefully employed when it leads us not to speculation, but to earnest prayer for them and the attempt to be in our own lives such good advertisement for Christianity as will make it attractive. And he says, the world does not consist of 100% Christians and 100% non-Christians. There are people, a great many of them, who are slowly ceasing to be Christians, but who still call themselves by that name. Some of them are clergymen. There are other people who are slowly becoming Christian, though they do not call, not yet call themselves so. There are people who do not accept the full Christian doctrine about Christ, but who are so strongly attracted by him that they are his in a much deeper sense than they themselves understand. There are people in other religions who are being led by God's secret influence to concentrate on those parts of their religion which are in agreement with Christianity and who thus belong to Christ without knowing it.
Okay.
I don't know.
So you're saying,
right?
This is what I'm hearing you say, or what C.S. Lewis.
So what he's saying basically is, if someone follows a false god but is doing these things that are good, that they are attracted to doing, they are doing those good things for God because good deeds are only for God. They can't be for a bad god or a vile god.
So Jesus is covertly entrenched in other teachings, even if people who follow those teachings don't know it.
I mean, if you think about it, we're all, wired with a sort of right or wrong.
Right.
C.S. Lewis, if you've ever read Mere Christianity, he talks a lot about this, that, for people who have a hard time understanding why we are God's chosen, it's that, an animal will react to a scenario, will react on instincts, fight or flight.
Right.
Something happens, they're either going to run or they're going to stay and fight with their people. Mm-hmm. But humans will sit there, they'll have instincts, and then they'll sit there and think about them and think, what should I do?
We're the only animals that can override our own instinct. So if it's if you're supposed to run, it's a burning house, we can override that instinct with running into and putting yourself at risk to save that other individual. So that's something that is a very important distinction between us and all other life. But I gotta tell you, that sounds like wishful thinking, really, from C.S. Lewis. just my opinion. The reason being is, if you don't know, I get what he's saying. If you're serving a god that's not real, but you're doing the deeds of God, you're doing good things of God, that still works, though, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So it starts in the heart, whether you believe or don't believe.
And this was under the assumption that he, due to his culture, he was serving the god of which he was culturally ingrained in.
So, interesting thought.
But he knew about Aslan, though, did he not?
Yeah.
And so even in that, so if you were to flip that into Christianity, you'd still be judged appropriately because you knew about Jesus and yet you served this other one.
But I don't know, because he knows about Aslan from the perception of his society, learning that Aslan was the devil.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I think.
Yeah. So okay. His interpretation of our Christ-like figure, right, was that this was not the way. Mm-hmm. My way is the way, until he was exposed to it and identified, oh my gosh, you are right. However, what you're also saying, I believe I'm hearing you say, I have been unknowingly serving you.
Yeah.
Even when I served the other guy. Right?
Now, is there an example in the Bible about that?
So, okay. So he did have,
I'm very curious about that, because.
Let me see. So Lewis encountered, Lewis argues that this can be derived from the parable of the sheep and goats in Matthew 25, 34-40, and Paul's speech to the Athenians in Acts 17:23, What you now worship as something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you. And from 1 Timothy 4:10, God, the Savior of all men, especially of those who believe. Lewis encountered at least one contradiction to this idea in Romans 10:14. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? This is consistent with Paul's doctrine that though God is already with the pagans, they still need to see him revealed. Lewis, however, replied with 1 Corinthians 1:12 through 13. One of you says, I follow Paul. Another, I follow Apollos. Another, I follow Cephas. Still another, I follow Christ. Is Christ divided? Which he interprets as indicating the sameness of God regardless of his context.
That is very interesting. That's very interesting.
Okay. I don't get it. In English, what does that mean?
So he was basically saying, you know, he mentions, I follow Paul, I follow...
well, you mentioned Apollo, it was a Roman god.
Roman, okay.
Yep.
Right, and so... Roman
deity.
Yeah, because what was the other one? Cephas. I think it's just he's kind of bringing up in every religion, you know, like we talking about works, and it's like, so this discussion seems very easy for it to be like Christianity versus everything else, like Eastern religions. But it's like, let's look at our Christian understanding towards Catholicism. You know, there's like major differences that, you know, it is very work-based or, right. You know, kind of you... And I wasn't grown up in the Catholic Church, but, you know, talking to a priest as a, you know, midway
right,
towards
right.
God, you right. know, which would be, so some of these things too, in reading Mere Christianity, he says that, he kind of opens up the book saying, Christianity is a big house and our job is to get him in the door. Mm-hmm. And he says in terms, if you want to be, you know, name any sort of religion within Christianity, he's like, that's all we're called to bring him. And he basically makes it a point that all the little arguments between of our religions is what keeps people out of the door. Mm. And why Christians do more damage ourselves by our little subsets.
Right.
So looking at that, is he implying here that, you know, like being a Muslim or something, if there is a way to reach God, I don't know if he's going that far. I don't know.
Yeah, Muslims believe Jesus was real, but they believe he was a teacher, not the Son of God.
Right.
Jews do not, the ones who are non-messianic, do not believe Jesus was the Son of God. And this is where I have my issue with C.S. Lewis's thinking, is because if you're following a different doctrine, but ultimately he's saying that you're following Jesus when Jesus is clearly there and you choose to follow something else that just happens to line up with Jesus. I don't think that is a good enough tenet. Me personally, I don't think that would be a good enough tenet for you to be judged positively or to, you know, to get that golden ticket, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it has to be a conscious decision. Clear-minded, not by accident. has to be an intelligent decision, just like those of you who are married. You know, you just didn't happen to fall into it. You weighed the pros and cons. You know, you made the conscious decision to share your life with this person. Right. So that's where C.S. Lewis and I made.
Well,
I see what he's saying,
and that's what he's saying about Emmett, this character, is that he, in all his heart, had made the conscious decision of how he grew up into the religion he was taught to take as reality. He did invest his faith in it,
mm-hmm.
and lived out the good things in that. And when it came time to when his faith was exposed and something was wrong, he still did the right thing. And that's where we get into, like, this is
except
like...
he killed that guard, though.
Right.
That was the right thing.
Well, and I don't, and again, it's like I probably should have read the.
So putting this into, before we wrap this up, putting this into a real world context. So you're saying that someone who's following a different faith and is following that faith to the T is indeed doing the way. See, you see what I'm saying? See how that can get kind of
Well, and the I think it's like that the doctrine stuff isn't, because that's just religious. The practices of steps we all take in our different religious is just a man-made construct behind it all. But the spirituality of him believing God and being faithful to his, and again, it's kind of implied too that he was doing good things.
Emmett.
Yeah, Emmett is. I'll have to read. I'd love to read more on it. But but honestly, that's that one book I've always remembered that part. Just like really, that's kind of wild, and it seems to be a big hot topic of. From C.S. Lewis.
So what kind of flack did he take from critics about that? Do you know?
I mean, a lot of people seem to be be upset. Yeah. yeah. I don't know. I wish I would have came more prepared for that.
But it's really interesting. That is interesting, though. It's interesting because you're saying that there may be tenets of Christianity that is in other religions, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are a Buddhist or a Muslim or a non-messianic Jew or something, a Jewish person or something to that effect, if you're following aspects of your faith and there are aspects, parts of it that are fundamentally Christian or Christ-like, you know, that you're kind of following Christ. And I guess the only argument against that is then you're kind of not following Christ right? And so, that's an interesting concept because again, you, it depends on like, you know, it depends on how you, what your religion teaches, I guess, and how much of it is aligned with the ways of teachings of Jesus. But that's an interesting way of applying, you know, and I think what C.S. Lewis is really getting at, as I understand what you read, is coverage, right? For those that may not have heard the word the way maybe you and I have heard it, as opposed to, that's how I'm hearing what you're saying. So that's interesting. That part is interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if when he said, like, because he said there's so many people.
Are they damned? You know, so let's circle back to where we are, where we started.
Right.
Those people then, if 75% of what they are been exposed to is non-Christ-like, but 25% is that 25% enough? To
only if that 25% includes you believing in your heart and confessing it with your mouth.
Fair enough. You know what? Okay.
I can't announce it.
Yeah. No, according, you can get that right on the head.
Yeah, according to the Gospels, that's the only way to get to heaven, right? So everything else, I mean, I'm just asking. You know,
it's an interesting thought, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And, 100%. 100%.
And again, we put it in towards like we have a way of compartmentalizing thing. I mean, God's looking for faith. I think that's maybe what he's saying is that, and why he said, you know, you have Christians who call themselves Christians,
right?
Clergymen who do everything right. You know, they got the works down. They say they're Christian, everything. But is their heart a Christian?
Right.
Plenty of people not. We're on the other side. You have a person, because of how they've grown up, has everything wrong. You're worshiping the wrong God. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the faith is there. You know, and again, this is like we look at other, say, in religions where maybe it's like a lot of it, I think, comes down to like, maybe processes or well, I don't eat meat on this day or something that. And you live your whole life to these different set of rules that is in God's mind, you know, this is a whole bigger thing of discussion, but you know, it's just about your connection with God. And we have a lot of,
and you mentioned those steps, but even in the Jewish faith, there were a lot of steps in order for people to be absolved from their sin. There was all these different laws that they had to follow, which was why grace came in, right? Mm-hmm. That's where Jesus came in, right? So you, because God knew that humanity couldn't follow the law. So then entered the age of grace. So again, going back to the damnation, salvation, you know, regardless of how you believe, according to the book, there's only one way. And any other path leads you down into the abyss. And it's hard for me to say otherwise. I know we all struggle with it. We're all concerned about the fact that people are going to burn in hell for all eternity. That's a very long time. Like I said, I burned my finger on the stove one time, and I was out for 3 days. So I cannot imagine.
Do you think that someone can believe that without knowing Jesus Christ's name?
Someone could what?
Do you think someone could accept Jesus Christ as the Son of God without ever hearing the name Jesus Christ?
You are raising fire. Okay. Yes.
That's
the only way for an unreached. Otherwise, they would be condemned to damnation without the opportunity for salvation.
But I'm saying the physical name is that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it has to be the physical name, to be honest with you. Because Jesus wasn't his name in Aramaic anyway, Hebrew or whatever it is, Yeshua. Right?
But we said, though, that you must confess with your
mouth.
Right. That Jesus is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the, in essence, accepting the ticket.
Right, right.
Right? He's asking, are you... You're not accepting the ticket traditionally, the way we talked about it, but you're accepting it in other ways because you're conducting your life in a way that demonstrates you've accepted the ticket.
Yeah.
Even if you did not physically, I don't want to misinterpret you, even if you did not physically say it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So...
Like if someone, you know, if
the audience could only see you,
but yeah, like this is like if somehow there was a closed culture where everything else lined up and they called Jesus, you know, XYZ or something.
Right.
And there should be nothing wrong with that. It's just an identifier.
I agree.
Goes back to the person that runs the orphanage. Uh-huh. Who lives in a foreign land,
right.
Who never was exposed to Jesus, but, you know, lived in such a way that all of these ways, I've conducted my life, I've affected humanity in very positive ways. I just never, in my heart, accepted Jesus. But me, I've lived here, you know, gotten fat, whatever, right. Haven't done anything for anybody else but me, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And, I get to go.
So essentially, the child molester goes to heaven, but not the quote unquote good person.
Christ-like behaviors. Even if you did not accept Christ as from a religious point of view, but you lived a Christ-like life.
And again, I think that would be on.
I'm devil's advocate, by the way. So just so you know.
Yeah, he's really giving it to us now.
Because you're saying what I'm supposed to be saying.
Well, can I raise a question? So
go for it.
So when Jesus died on the cross for our sins,
uh-huh.
Our method of redemption changed. It used to be an offering,
right.
A slaughtering offering,
right.
And that's how people's, you know, sins were forgiven by showing an offering to God,
right.
So when Jesus died on the cross.
In the Middle East, at least, because there are other things happening outside in the rest of the world, so we don't know about those.
Well, but that's what God required.
Right, right.
So that was the way of redemption.
Right.
When Jesus died on the cross, people living elsewhere who didn't hear about Jesus dying on the cross, how were they to be forgiven of their sins if they hadn't heard of Jesus dying on the cross in this interim period before it's written in the Bible? Let's say there was people in remote areas who didn't hear about this, that he was a son of God.
And there were.
Were their methods of sacrificing for an offering, was that sufficient enough to forgive their sins? Even though the game has changed and God changed the law and said, no, this is the way to the Father.
That's a valid point, and I have no idea. Because we know other things were happening in the rest of the world while Jesus was conducting his ministry. Now, whether he... supernaturally appeared in all these different areas, I will never know. But it is a possibility. Could he have sent angels to minister to unreached people groups? Yes. We've seen evidence of that in many cultures where there's been an individual who has spread the word about the gospel and about God, but no one knows who he was, where he came from, any of that stuff. They said he suddenly appeared, and then suddenly one day he was gone. You know, so we've seen evidence of that. So it is possible, so we simply don't know. But ultimately, we cannot answer any of these questions. Yeah.
But you see what I mean.
But I'm happy that we've had the opportunity to at least discuss them.
Yes.
Because it's not, again, I think the whole point of what we're doing is sharing questions.
Right.
Right? And in the process, and I'm speaking strictly for myself right now, in the process of sharing a question, the faith deepens, actually.
Uh-huh.
So, and having these types of discussions, not the regular, oh, just have faith, believe. That's great.
Right.
But then when you have questions like, yeah, but I'm really struggling with understanding and reconciling and,
right,
you know, 1 and 1 = 8, you know, when, you know, that these types of discussions, I think we need to have more. So I'm hoping that people who hear this have a similar experience.
Well, and chime in. If you have questions, if you have comments about what we said, you know, if you don't like what B said, let him know. No, but seriously, this is a podcast that is for both Christians and non-Christians, believers, non-believers, atheists, whatever. We have the same questions that you do, right? And we're not always going to have the answers. And you
think it's clear.
You're right.
We have very little answers.
But we want you to know that there are other people just like you who are just as unsure about the tenets of the Christian faith as you are. So just sit back and enjoy when we're talking. And if you have questions, reach out to us. We don't know the answers. We don't know all the answers. But hopefully in the long run, we're going to reach some solution on some of the questions that we all have, because that's why we put the question mark in question Christianity. Okay. So until next time, I have been Jay.
I have been Zell.
And we'll see you next time. Be safe. Be blessed.